Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and I am super excited about the podcast today. It's something that you have probably never heard of before happening, or maybe you have. Maybe it's happening other places in the church, I'm not sure. But this idea was told to me by a good friend of mine who lives in Australia, and she was talking about this really cool project that I have not been able to get on my mind for like 9 months now. So I can't wait to hear all about it because I really don't totally understand what's happening either. So I'm going to be learning just as much as you are. So I'd like to introduce Kate Jones and Candace Kerr Unger. So hello, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Carla.
So Candace, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, my name's Candace. I live in Sydney, Australia. I am a pastor at West Pennon Hills Congregation in Sydney, but in my non-volunteer church life, I'm also a social worker at a hospital, and that's how Kate and I know each other.
Thank you. Well, that was a really quick introduction.
Sorry, I didn't know how long you wanted.
No, you did great. I actually didn't know you were a pastor at West Pennon. That's exciting.
Oh, there you go.
Kate, tell us about yourself.
Hi. I'm a social worker as well. As Candace said, that's how we met. I've worked in the field of spinal cord injury since about 2001, but about, maybe 5-6 years ago, I sort of ventured into the field of research and ended up doing a PhD, and the PhD was on the topic of spirituality and resilience after spinal cord injury. So that sort of took me on a whole different direction, and I'm currently... we'll be telling you a little bit about the in-between years, but currently I'm working as an early career researcher at the University of Notre Dame, Australia, on a project that's funded through both themselves and St. Vincent's Hospital in Sydney.
That sounds fascinating. Now I'm even more excited about this podcast. So Candace, why don't you start us off and tell us about how this whole thing happened and actually what this thing is?
Sure. Okay. So a few years ago, we were sitting doing our budget build-up, trying to plan what we were going to do for the next financial year. And I think there was two things. One, West Pennant Hills is very fortunate to have a regular tenant in the building. So we have a preschool that rents it. So we have good financial income, and one of the congregations that is blessed because of regular income coming into the building. The building works hard for us. But we were struggling with like a vision, like what were we doing as a congregation? Where are we putting our energies? There's no point having this big fat bank account if you've got absolutely nothing missional happening. And so I think for us at the time, we were trying to look for where was it that we were being called to have impact in the community, but also acknowledging that we were quite time poor as a congregation. We were getting more and more numbers small in terms of that demographic that could do something. And I guess we were just really struggling with this whole idea of, can the congregation and the church be present in the community without having to do it ourselves? And so I guess we were just sort of letting that ruminate around where we were being called to be active in the community and how we could possibly do it when we didn't have necessarily the man hours, but we did have good economic resources. So whilst we were, kind of thinking about our opportunities, the thought sprung amongst the leaders group of what if we partnered with somebody else, like another agency who was doing something awesome or wanted to do something awesome, and what they actually needed was the economic kind of seed funding, and we could be that little mustard seed. We didn't have to be the one doing it all. We could be the one that let, you know, new life breathe. So I think that's sort of like the background to what was happening in the congregation at the time. And then obviously Kate and I have worked together for a very long time, like over 10 years. And I knew that she was doing her PhD. And Kate, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about how we got to this point?
So this could be a very long story, but we'll try to make it short. as a social worker in spinal cord injury, I guess I've always found... So people are having, coming into hospital, having had a catastrophic injury, that's life-changing. It's going to be with them generally for the rest of their lives. It's changing everything about their life, their family relationships, how they do things, their hobbies, everything. And so as a social worker, I used to like really want to get that sense of who they were as really holistically and talk to them about spirituality as well as everything else. Like, how do you make sense of this? What's your bigger picture on life, on the world, you know, and what's happened? But what I was finding, so these things were coming up, they were important to people, whether they had faith or didn't have faith, spirituality was something that was important. But I was sort of picking up that it just wasn't something that as a rehabilitation team we were really addressing for people. And so that's what led to my PhD research, is I just thought, well, I really want to know what this relationship is between spirituality and resilience, especially after spinal cord injury. And we'd already done some resilience building work. Both Candace and I had been involved in that for family members of people after spinal or brain injury. So we knew resilience was a really key concept. And once again, even in that research, spirituality was coming up, but there just wasn't a sense of, well, how do these things work together? And so that's what my PhD really set out to find out. And so I managed to do some surveys with people and their family members, as well as some interviews, and found that after spinal cord injury, yes, spirituality is really important. It doesn't matter which faith background or no faith background, it really is important. It was helping people find deeper meaning, connectedness, helping them get through, giving them hope after spinal cord injury. So all these things were really, really important. But then I also did some focus groups with staff, and the staff were saying, actually, we don't feel comfortable with this topic. It's not something we feel confident to talk to people about. So these are physios, OTs, psychologists, or people working in spinal cord injury. And they were saying, actually, this is not something we feel like is something we can address. And they were acknowledging, yes, maybe it is important, but they just didn't know what to do with it. And so after my PhD, Candace and I sat down for lunch one day, and I think her question to me simply was, well, what are you going to do now? And I was like, oh, I guess I'll just go back to being a social worker and, you know, maybe try and encourage people to think about this. And then she said, what would you like to do now? And I was going, oh, different question. I'd really love to get in and make a difference here and really see if we can incorporate spirituality into rehabilitation, make it something that's you know, part of the process. And that's, yeah, where things really started, I guess.
Yeah, so that was after that conversation for us was like, well, this is maybe the opportunity for the church, you know, like there isn't a lot of funders around there willing to fund spiritual projects in public health settings. Like it's a interesting space, you know, like we're not making people walk faster or stand stronger or go to the toilet quicker. Like it's, and I think that can be the story for many psychosocial things. It's difficult to find funding, but, and the church is definitely not like a research grant agency. So it was new for us as well, like on the church side, to be thinking, well, how do we give money to somebody else? There was a bit of pushback. There was a little bit of negotiation with other people around, well, why this one project? Shouldn't we be opening it up to like a million projects? And it just really came back to that conversation that we had with our congregation of where can the congregation be present in our local community? And the hospital that Kate and I work at is within, you know, geographically close enough to the congregation to be considered part of our local community. That's going to have value, that's going to have meaning, that's going to actually bring something to abolish unnecessary suffering. And so for us, that was kind of the match made in heaven.
So let me know if I understand this correctly. So West Pennant Hills Congregation funds your research, Kate, is that correct? And works with you while you do all of the spirituality work with people with spinal cord injury.
West Pennant Hills Congregation funds Kate, like, well, while she was working at Royal Rehab, which is a hospital. So the money was given to Royal Rehab so Royal Rehab could employ her into a research officer role. And the research officer role at the hospital was to, you know, should can talk more about that in a second, but really it was the church handing over money in faith and saying, we trust this is going to be used in the right way. And there were no strings in terms of, and now you need the church to be involved in this way or that way. It was completely, I think this is the thing that's kind of different, that a lot of people are like, what, your church just gave away money? I don't think people necessarily think about the impact that we can have economically by being generous and by letting people who know what they're doing just get on with it. We don't need to be involved with, you know, any sort of strings attached or conditions. I mean, there were definitely conditions about the timelines for how long something would be produced, and there was a clear vision about what that something might be. There was quarterly financial reporting. There was quarterly reporting about what was happening. So there was definitely governance around the money, but it wasn't with like a second agenda for, you know, converting members or for trying to get the church's name like backdoor into anything like that.
This is an incredible ministry. Like this is, I mean, I don't even know exactly, Kate, what it looks like, you know, when you're working with people, but this changes people's lives. What a gift the West Pennant Hills congregation has given. That's awesome. That is awesome. As a bishop in Community Christ, I you know, the money thing, it kind of stresses me out sometimes, but for the most part, I'm like, this is the best use of funds ever. So what happens, Kate? Like, what do you do? How do you work with people? What do you talk about spirituality? Tell me more about this. I'm so excited.
Yeah, look, it was totally my dream job. And I guess we should say, like, it was a probably 3-year period in the end that we worked on this project. And as Candace said, it was beautifully, like, we're so grateful. I think at Royal Rehab, we were just so grateful for this gift that they gave us, because it was so open, you know, such an open book. And so that really gave us an opportunity to go, okay, let's start at the beginning. We knew, I mean, my research in my PhD had certainly found some evidence that this was important, but where we were working sort of addresses both spinal cord injury and brain injury. And so we didn't know a whole lot about spirituality for people with a brain injury, what that research was. Let me tell you, there's very little research in that area, because we did a systematic review. We just said, let's look at the literature in this field. Very few. I think we came up with something like 9 studies that looked at brain injury and some sort of variation on spirituality. And so that was kind of helpful to know, okay, not much is happening in this space. So that was sort of our first kind of project. Then we also did a staff survey, and that was a sort of basically with people across Australia. So because one of the people on our team at Royal Rehab is a nurse and has connections with nurses around across all of Australia, she was able to send a survey out that way through everywhere, as well as people at Royal Rehab and social workers across New South Wales and Australia. So we were able to really say, well, what do you think spirituality is, and how confident do you feel about addressing it? And people was just like, I think we got over 100 surveys in the end, and they were just saying, actually, we really, really need more training in this area. And the rest of the other things we were reading were saying, actually, that's how you address spirituality. You need to start with the staff. You can't just put something into a program and not have the staff on board. And so I think it was, I can't even think, it was somewhere in that first year of the project we went, actually, what we really need to do, what this project needs to be about, is providing some support and education to staff who are working with clients day in, day out. And the thing that I think we all sort of knew is that if someone has a spinal cord injury or brain injury, comes into hospital, they're not necessarily going to talk to a stranger who's a chaplain or even a social worker or psychologist. They may open up to the nurse who's the one person they see every night in the middle of the night throughout the night and have built a trust relationship with. Or it might be the physio in the gym who they open up to because they're there every day doing exercise and it's really tough and everything's very confronting. And so we kind of knew that everybody needs to be able to feel confident in this space, and everyone needed to be equipped to be able to have a conversation in this space, because it could, you know, issues of spirituality, meaning making, why am I here, why has this happened to me, can come up at any point in the rehabilitation journey. So I think that's where we got to. We just went, actually, we need to do something here that's going to train staff across the board. And so that's really where we started then developing and building materials for a staff spiritual care training program. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you want me to keep going with that?
Yeah. So how, like, if you're working with people who come maybe from all different types of faith or no faith at all, how do you handle that? Is that even an issue? Or and also, how do you continue to train the staff in that way? You know, like, For instance, I'm a full-time minister, but, and I perform weddings and stuff, but I can never call myself like do pre-marriage counseling because I'm not a counselor and I never want to say that. So I don't, your staff aren't counselors either. So how do they kind of know what to say and know what to do? And
yeah, I can, maybe I'll just describe the program because we developed it very specifically to meet the needs of staff who were from either faith backgrounds or no faith backgrounds. People who are saying, that's not my business, I don't feel comfortable in this space, this was the program for them. So it was literally just 2.5 hours of their time. The first hour, Candace and I together interviewed a whole range of people who could tell us about different sources of spiritual strength that they drew upon. And so that didn't necessarily have to be faith or religious faith. It could be the natural world. And so one of the people we interviewed talked about how she'd had some homely leave going home for a weekend from hospital, and she'd come across a bridge being driven home and the trees were just incredible. And she said she actually she couldn't breathe properly because of that experience of seeing trees for the first time in several months. And how profound that was for her and how she realized how deprived she'd been in a sort of spiritual way because she hadn't had that connection with the natural world. And yeah, others spoke, yeah, just about different ways that they, you know, access spirituality and how that helped them after their injury. So the first hour for these people in training in the staff is sitting down in front of a computer screen and listening to several videos and getting a sense of how broad spirituality can be and how important it is for so many people. And so that was really the first hour. And the second hour is a workshop. And so they come along, it's an hour and a half. They get a little bit of research, you know, and we tell them a little bit about the research, a little bit about what we know about spirituality after traumatic injury. And then we give them a tool, something that they can then use in a conversation at any time. They could use it to document, they could use it in a conversation, they could use it walking in a corridor with someone. And it really taps into that idea of what sources of spiritual strength does a person draw on. And they might not use that word spiritual. So we, you know, there's a whole lot of different ways to talk about spirituality. And in Australia, I think one of the ways is, what lifts you up, you know, what lifts you? And so if you think about that idea of transcendence and going above all the things that bother you day to day, and even, you know, in hospital and experiencing all the stuff, there's something for most people that will lift them above all of that. And it might be a connection with another person. Like it might be their relationship with their children that is actually a really spiritual connection, and it just means everything to them and gets them up in the morning, and that's what lifts them up. Or it might be that the trees that lift them up, or it could be their faith in God is just tremendously, profoundly important to them, and that will lift them up above everything. And so we use the acronym SOAR, S-O-A-R, and that sense of lifting, if you can sort of imagine it, has helped for us. It was just a four-letter acronym that they could take away: sources of spiritual strength, others that you connect with around that, how you want us to address it, so a very tangible sense of what do you want me to do about that, and how relevant is that to you right now. So yeah, so that kind of conversation, like people could pick that sore up at any point, talking to someone in the physio, someone's really down, or what used to lift you up, what used to be really important and meaningful to you, you know, that could be the start of that conversation. But it could also equally be, oh, I know that you're, you know, of a Christian background, and I'm just wondering what's lifting you up at the moment, what's helping you. And they might say, oh yeah, getting into my Bible or prayer is something that's really, you know, really important and relevant to me right now. Or it might be, actually I'm feeling really isolated, and I don't know if God's here for me, and I'm really struggling with that. So that might be the conversation that comes out of that. But it's just making staff feel, or helping staff to feel, oh, actually, I can sit with this. I can sit here and have this conversation. I don't have to refer this person off. They're trusting me to start this conversation. Okay, here's a few things I can ask them and get this conversation going. And at the end of that conversation, when they say, you know, oh, well, how do you want me to address that for you? Or how do you want me to assist you right now? They might say, oh, yeah, can I talk to someone a bit more? Well, can I refer you to a chaplain, or, you know, or would you like to talk to the social worker a bit about that a bit further? But they've opened up to that first person, and then they're in that patient, or that person with the injury is then in control of that. They can say, yes, I'd like you to help me with this, or no, I'm okay. That's fine. I'm okay. I'm good. Yeah. So really, that's the training in a nutshell, is just the video stories, getting a little bit of background, and then getting a tool. And then we give them a chance to practice it in that workshop. So they have a bit of, you know, role playing and time to practice it. Yeah. It's very simple, but it made the world of difference.
Yeah. I mean, you have given your staff confidence to talk about this. Like that is huge. That is huge, because the S word, spirituality, scares a lot of people. A lot of people, because they're like, I don't know anything about the Bible. I don't know anything about the whatever, you know? And so they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to look silly or whatever. But anybody can talk to someone using SOAR, yeah. Right?
I think the other part is people don't want to be seen, particularly in like a health setting, to be like, you know, maybe trying to convert somebody or crossing some imaginary boundary of like oversharing around someone's faith or getting too religious. And this kind of draws it out of being religious and being spiritual and tapping into something that's just a fundamental part of who we are as human beings. You know, we're physical, spiritual, emotional, and social beings. So I think this just kind of helps plug that. How do we talk about things that are spiritual and important without being completely uncomfortable about it?
When we talked to the staff after the training, one of the things that really came out, and we actually had it as an overarching theme in all this thematic analysis, was spirituality is everybody's business. And they really grasped that. They actually went, a few of them just said it. That's why we held on to that. Spirituality is everybody's business. And so they got that. And it's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. One thing I really like about this is that the vulnerability piece, because when somebody asks the question, they're also being vulnerable too. They're saying, you know, like, you know, I really care about you, and I want to know more about you in a very kind and calm and compassionate way. And if that person is like, no, thanks, you're like, okay, no problem. But when two people are vulnerable together, that connection is so strong. So I love how simple it is. And I also really was taken with your training, how you showed an hour's worth of spirituality, like what people talked about. Cause in some ways that really primes the pump, because if a staff member's like, I'm not spiritual at all, they're like, wait a second, I like nature too. And I feel something when I'm in nature too. So I love how that pump was primed, because then they can share too.
That's exactly what someone said. She said that the tree example I gave, she just said, I watched that video and I didn't think I was a spiritual person. But then I went, actually, I love trees too. And she's like, maybe I am spiritual. So that was just a light bulb moment where she's like, oh, yeah, that's for me too. And someone else was just saying, yeah, you keep seeing it everywhere now. Like, you know, that they kept seeing it in people, even though that they'd never really been, always previously thought, oh, that's someone else's business. You know, it's not my area. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, that's for somebody else to take care of. Actually, it's all of our jobs to take care of each other. Oh, this is so beautiful. You're making me cry a little bit. So you've trained the staff now. Staff understand. So how is it going? You know, how's the staff doing working with people? And are people...
You know, Carla, one of the interesting things that's come from it is, we do like, in non-coronavirus days, we would do outings, right? You'd go to the shops. That was the major one. And it'd be like, oh, let's go to the shops. We'll practice your shopping. And we like go out. And I think through the training, one of the, it was actually probably the same lady, was like, I hate the shops. I don't want to go to the shops. But if the point is to practice my community mobility, then I'd love to go like out to the beach or out to the mangroves or Maybe we could go to like a musical kind of thing. And I think it's really just helped people go, what was the purpose of those like outdoor activities? It's to practice community mobility. So how can we practice community mobility without necessarily just thinking, oh, we'll just go to the shops. And so I've seen so many people are like, oh, let's do our therapy in the garden. Let's do our, like, we've got this beautiful garden at Royal Rehab, really amazing. And we should give a little shout out to Chris Wynes, who's like the magical garden fairy, because it's got this, you know, there's like a water feature, and at the moment, because it's spring, I just noticed it this week going, wowee, it is out of, it is just beautiful. And so people are doing like their speech therapy in the garden now. And I just kind of think that maybe we've just really gone, who said we had to stay in these four walls? Like no one, no one said we had to stay in these four walls. And there's a better appreciation for things that are important, like music and art and some of those more, you know, what we maybe would have said recreational activities, but it's like, well, what's the purpose of that for this person and how can we make it work? And like, particularly people who have got like big family connections, you know, how do we facilitate those in a way that, you know, isn't necessarily going to impact on everyone else? So maybe we book a room and then they can meet out there. But I think it's just a bit more creativity around it. And more than anything, it's given the staff a vocabulary, a shared vocabulary for how to talk about something, which is important, because I think sometimes you can dance around something and not really know how to talk about it. Whereas what we've done now is by giving everyone a shared vocabulary, they can kind of get to the heart of an issue.
I think that's right. I think one of the big things that we got in the feedback, that was the language that we were using, was really important. And people were saying spirituality. I thought that was just about religion. And now they're going, oh, okay, maybe I have been talking a little bit about spirituality with my clients, but I just didn't realize that was spirituality. And so it suddenly got this really broad understanding, which I think is just so helpful, because then they can go, oh, yeah, well, someone who has a faith, that might come up there, but that's not something to be scared about. It's just part of who they are, and that's part of that bigger picture. And yeah, another lovely thing that came out was one of the rec therapists actually just said, oh, I had forgotten this stuff. Like, she trained and, you know, spirituality must have been part down in that deep meaning making, why we do rec therapy, why we get people outdoors, you know, we really dig into that. And she said, but I'd stopped asking why that was important to them. And I'd just been doing it with them. And, you know, rehab can be a very, you know, discharge focus kind of get people out the door as quick as possible kind of thing. And so staff can sometimes feel quite stressed about that, and it becomes very functional, very, you know, just like, have they got improvements? Can they go? And she was just saying, actually, no, I just can sit with this. You know, I can have these conversations. This is who I trained to be. I'd just forgotten it. And yeah, a few people talked about that. Just this is why I'm doing this, but I'd forgotten it because I'd just been so caught up in the sort of functional discharge focus kind of rehab thing.
For a lot of the nurses too, Kate. Hey, like they're going, oh, this is nursing 101. This is like how to have a hard conversation in the middle of the night. Like, and also the nurses that trained, like this, the old program where you had like a apprenticeship style train, like you learnt on the hospital versus learning in the universities. And the ones that learned in the hospitals were like, this is exactly what we used to do. Like, we just had drawn away, which I think probably reflects a little bit on how society has evolved and how comfortable or uncomfortable we are having conversations, you know, that get to the heart of a matter. And that are more vulnerable, that, you know, that there's this sort of disconnect between needing other people or wanting to kind of share about who you deep, like honestly are, and kind of, you know, unveil that. But that really for some, this was just like a wake up call. And for others, it was a light bulb moment. And really, I think we're now a year later. Do you want to maybe talk, Kate, a little bit about just some of the different articles as well, in case anyone wants to follow up? Yeah.
So we've had two articles accepted for publication, one looking at the quantitative results. So we did surveys with staff before training, after training, and 6 weeks later. And we actually recruited a control group as well. So we were able to show that in terms of competency, confidence, and comfort levels, as well as just knowledge of spirituality as that broad kind of construct, people in the intervention group, which I think we trained about 40, 41 maybe staff. And compared to the control group, these guys from pre to post and then even at follow-up were just so much stronger in terms of their confidence, comfort levels, all those things. It was amazing. So statistically significant results. So they were just like powering on and going, yeah, we get this and we want to run with it. Whereas the control group was just like this sort of flat line. So that was great for us because we could say, okay, that's really effective. And obviously it would have been ideal to then keep, you know, testing them later, but we were restricted to the time limits that we had. So that's one of the articles. So that's going to come out in Neuro Rehab, hopefully later this year. And then the other article was we interviewed 16 of the staff who went through the training and just asked them about the impact that it had had on their basically their practice, but also their thinking around spirituality. And that was really rich data. I've touched on a couple of things already that came out of that. And that article's just been accepted for the journal Disability and Rehabilitation. So, I don't actually have the titles of the articles in front of me, but I can get them for you if anyone's interested. Yeah.
I'm sure that they're very, very long titles, and they seem to be with really, really $1,000 words in them. Words that I would be like, what's that mean?
I know the qualitative one does have spirituality is everybody's business. That is the first part of the the article. Yeah.
Well, I would understand that. So I really love what you two are talking about, how, you know, talking about spirituality hasn't muddied the waters. It has made them more focused, and it has found a way to be like what Candace said, what's important here? Music, arts, and relationships. I love that you keep going back to relationships. I don't even know if we've mentioned the word relationships, but that's what's happening here. And so can we talk more about how the people who have spinal cord injuries, how are they changed by all this? Besides, like, are they getting stronger faster, or is it changing their medical as well as their the way they feel?
Do you want to talk
as
about
in the training or spirituality itself? The
spirituality training itself.
Oh, okay, I can touch on some of the results that I found in my PhD, which was that, so spirituality had a tremendous impact on people's relationships after spinal cord injury. So that was one of the sources of spiritual strength, I think, people identified. So there's like the natural world, faith in God, something within themselves that was a really strong thing, and then a connection with others. And so that connection could be with their husband, with their wife, with their child. So like one of this mum whose son had a spinal injury in a car accident just said of her two boys, she said, they are my life. You know, they are my life. That's why I live. And this had happened to her son. And they both her son and herself spoke after the injury that he just said, that's why I'm alive now. You know, what has given me a reason to live. He also spoke about his brother. So I said to him, I think my question was something like, what does spirituality mean to you? And he was like, spirituality like religion? And I'm an atheist or something like that. And I said, oh no, like what gets you up in the morning? Like what's helping you just to give meaning to your life so that you keep living? And he just said, oh, that'd be my brother and my mom, you know, like, yeah, that's easy to answer. Like, you know, that they are my life. That gets me out in the morning. They're the ones who were sitting with me. They were the ones that were there for me during this time. So, you know, when he was in a coma and they were the ones sitting there with him, they were the ones who he woke up for and just went, yeah, I want to live. And they were the ones now that everything, you know, was purpose. Like he was living so he could continue those relationships. And one of the outcomes of one of the things I found is, you know, people, so they had these different sources of spiritual strength that they drew upon injury happened. They went through a lot of questioning about that. Like, is that person going to be here for me? You know, this was sort of these relationships were tested in some way. And then there was this deepening of those relationships. So like another son with his mom just said, she used to be my mom, now she's my best friend. So yeah, just this injury experience had just incredibly deepen those relationships. And so one of the other things was gratitude. Like, people were just so grateful for the people that they had in their lives. I think when I was looking at these relationships and what was happening, spinal cord injury in itself is a shared experience. Like, it's something, it doesn't just happen to an individual. It does physically, but the whole experience actually happens to a family, or, you know, to a whole group, family, friends, community, you could say, and everyone is impacted by that, and they all embark on that journey together. And so, you know, in these interviews that I was doing with my PhD, I was talking to the person with the injury and their family member, and they're going, we're in this together. This is what we're holding on to together. We're hoping moving forward together. Like, it was all about this, being in this together. Yeah, I think it's just profoundly important. I mean, and you can say relationships, like, one thing that we, how we describe spirituality to people, especially those from a non-faith background, is we say it's about connectedness. So whether you're connected with the natural world and you see yourself as some part of something bigger. So, like, for one lady, it was just looking at the stars and going, actually, I'm part of something bigger, and so I feel okay by that. But for others, that person, that is a person, that something bigger is a person, and they're connected to God, and they go, yeah, this is who I'm on the journey with, and I know he's going to be with me no matter what happens. And for other, it's connectedness with other people. So, yeah, that really, you know, you have to, spiritual well-being is about being well connected. Yeah, so we do talk about that quite a bit.
Thank you so much for taking that jumbled question and answering it beautifully. I really appreciate that. It's like you could read my mind. Thank you for that answer. That was beautiful. So this project is just, it's just mind-blowing what you're doing. And like, I know there's so much work that's gone on behind it from you, Kate, and you, Candace, but it does sounds so simple and something that everyone could actually do. The people listening to this podcast, you don't need to be working with spinal cord injury people. Like, you can just ask, you can use SOAR in your everyday life, right? And what, can you say one more time what SOAR means, what it stands for?
So S-O-A-R, S being sources of spiritual strength, or whatever that looked like. It can just be spirituality if that works for you. Others is the O. So what others do you connect with? So to going back to the idea of connection. So it could be people in a walking group, you know, that you go out on weekends with. Who do you connect with around that source of spiritual strength? A, how do you want us to assist you? We really wanted to give the staff something that was really practical, and they could just say, how do you want me to assist you with this? And R, how relevant is this to you now? Because obviously people are going through all kinds of questions often after such an injury. We just want to get a sense of where does that sit with you at right now. So S-O-A-R.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So listeners, if you want to use that in your everyday life, I don't know if Kate and Candace give you permission, but I think that they would. This is important stuff. So Candace, I kind of want to bring it back to you and the West Pennant Hills congregation. So now that this has been going on for, you said, a year or so, how are the people feeling about it? What are they thinking?
So we've just paid our last final installment of the project. It was split over a couple of years. And I guess, like, we'll be totally transparent. We're talking about $100,000 over a couple of years. So it was a sizable investment, but sometimes, you know, big bang, big buck. That's kind of my thinking on this one. And it's good to be able to have had an impact in the community. And so I guess, like we were just talking before, Carla, though, the thing that I hope that other congregations or, you know, members of the community might just want to reflect on is, how is it that your congregation can have an impact in your community? That it doesn't always have to mean members of your congregation are doing these activities. You know, we can have amazing impact, like what happens at Royal Rehab, through the generosity of what our congregation is able to do. And I guess the other part to this is it also gave our congregation a clear vision and purpose. Whilst, you know, our fundraising activities were to raise funding for the Spirituality Project, our when we're doing budget and we're talking about what it was that we were prioritizing this year, it was the Spirituality Project at Royal Rehab. When we were talking to other people about, oh, you know, what's your congregation involved in? Yeah, sure, we do kids ministries and we do church on a Sunday. But we're also invested in our local community in a way that is generous and open-hearted and also trying to improve the world in some way that we can. And I think the bit that took us a little bit to get our head around is that we don't have to be the ones doing the work. We can be partnering with people who know how to do the work and still have an amazing impact or outcome. And I think this is just like one example of how the church can have an influence through generosity, through strategic vision and partnering with other agencies. So, you know, in this project, I did have the two hats, and I'm very conscious of that. And that was a conflict of interest that we were upfront about at the very beginning. You know, I'm a pastor at a congregation and I'm a social worker at the same hospital. And so we put checks and measures in place that there were other people doing the financial side. There were other contacts within the hospital as well. So it wasn't just like all through me. But it's not a bad thing for us to use our personal relationships and our influence in our workplaces and all of those to share this opportunity. So I think sometimes we just need to be willing to let your worlds collide, because it can be a little bit embarrassing and awkward to be like, oh, my church has some money and my workplace maybe wants to do this research project and can I bring them all together, or is that weird and is it self-serving? And just kind of being willing to say, people can say no if they don't like this idea, that's okay. You know, I'm just introducing people. And in this case, it was introducing a hospital and a, you know, congregation, but being, I guess, generous enough to let your worlds come together to be able to have these sort of very beneficial relationships. They just do need a little bit of creative thinking and vulnerability.
And Candace, I would say, Community of Christ, you know, we call ourselves a peace church.
Yeah.
Are we always working towards peace? Not always, but we try. We try really hard. And I would say that however and whenever we can help someone find their spiritual home in whatever way, shape, or form that looks, we are creating peace in the world. And so if the spiritual home is with Community of Christ, awesome, we'd love to have you. But if that spiritual home is out in nature and you feel at peace with yourself and that helps you create peace in your family, in your neighborhood, that is awesome. That is what we are put on this earth to do. So it sounds like to me that you're doing exactly the work that God is calling you to do. And I'm starting to cry.
That was much more eloquent, Carla. Thank you. Yes, exactly.
I am spiritual home piece. Go ahead, Kate.
I would just say from my perspective, like, as I said earlier, like, so grateful for just the creative thinking, not only of Candace, but the willingness of that congregation to step outside of the box and think, you know, let's dynamically, how can we do this? How to trust us to do the work. I think Royal Rehab was very grateful for that, but also like Royal Rehab has gained so much from it because they really are leaders in this space now. And I, what I took from the project is now going on to other, like to other hospitals and places in Sydney. Like, just there's so much that we've learned, and it's going to keep giving and giving and giving in different ways. Like, it's going to change this space, really, this rehab space, I think, because rehab had forgotten about spirituality. And so it's just been tremendous what they've started. So I just take my hats off to the church and to their courage, I think, for being willing to fund this project, because I think it will just change the lives of so many people.
I think you're right, Kate. You know, we've done spirituality in death and dying. You know, it's very well done in death and dying. But I remember hearing one of our colleagues say, why do we need to wait till we're dying to be talking about issues of spirituality, meaning and purpose? Like, you know, there's other life-changing times. There's other times in your life to be having these big existential crisis questions. And we don't need to wait until we're dying. So it absolutely naturally fits within rehab to be exploring issues of spirituality. I think Kate and I were in the right place at the right time, and you know, the congregation was looking for something at the right time. And for all of those reasons, I would say that it's, you know, being divinely led, but also being willing to listen to that small, still voice is a big part of it.
I absolutely agree. And I agree with what Kate said. It takes courage to step out and to do something different and to spend that kind of money That's hard to do that. And to say, we trust you, that's really hard too. But look at the changes that have been made. And it's just so exciting to hear about it. So thank you, Kate and Candace, for being on this podcast and for telling us about this incredible ministry. I'm so inspired, and I'm so, well, for me, it's like 9:30 at night, but I'm so revved up right now about all of these possibilities that could happen. Oh, and FYI, 9:30 is super late for me. So that's why it's surprising. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm really grateful to both of you.
Thank you so much, Carla, for the opportunity.
Thanks, great Carla. To talk. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.